you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to The Ooze.
Upon decaying every foul wicked spirit in the host, The Ooze.
20 minutes, Zander Olive on The Ooze, spread out.
On The Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really happen to have a serial crime
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
All right, it's that time, Sunday night, and you are listening to The Ooze with your hosts, TC Downey and Jason Sorrell. TC, what's going on, man?
Shit, man, another day in the virtual Melrose place, dude. What's going on with you?
Not much. Just hanging out, watching a little football, trying to keep my allergies from messing with me too much. Going to be handling things on the switchboard tonight, which is a little shift in the way we normally do things here. So if you're calling in at 347-99-1371 and wondering why the hell that guy's not answering the phone, it's because I just have a really bad attention span. So I will try to get you on the phone if you do call in. But nothing's really going on tonight. I went to the Occupy Austin first day, October 6th. That was Thursday, and see what that was about. And kind of have mixed feelings about that whole thing. But it kind of lines up with what we're going to be talking about tonight. We're going to be talking about transgression.
Right on. Yeah, I suppose it would kind of line up. What was it? Just like a peaceful protest, or?
Well, it's an offshoot of that Occupy Wall Street thing. And basically what was going on is a bunch of people were supposed to show up starting at 10 o'clock on Thursday. They wanted as many people to show up as possible to kind of just sit in on City Hall, basically. So everybody was kind of camped out, standing around on the City Hall block there in that public area. And the point of the thing, the main thrust of this whole movement is they want to see corporate money extracted from the political process. They want to limit the corporate influence on our politicians. They want the politicians to listen to the people again. And they have a bunch of different ways of talking about doing that, you know, like making sure they don't want corporations to be listed as entities anymore or recognized as persons having those same rights. Or they want to limit, term limits for politicians. They want to limit the amount of funds that any one person can donate to a political campaign. There's a bunch of different things we're talking about, but on top of all that, while asking people to get behind this idea, limiting the corporate money going into politics, they're also giving everybody an opportunity to voice whatever issues, whatever grievances they feel are important in a democratic process where the group gets to vote up or down as to what will or will not be done about those different things. So they're not really dealing – they're trying to show a model of democracy as they think it should be expressed. And it was kind of interesting to see how it all broke down because the main tool they have, the thing they want everybody to gather around is this idea of solidarity, that all these people, the 99% of the people that don't have corporate money, need to stand together as one on specific issues relating to voters' rights and relating to things they think the country needs to get done. The problem is that while 99% of the people might be able to agree that corporate money should not have as much weight in the political system as it does, everything else that you're going to talk about, we don't agree on. You know, whether it's I heard all kinds of disagreements. I heard all kinds of debates and all kinds of things going on. So it was interesting to see how it all went down.
Right on. So I guess that kind of holds true to my theory that human beings just aren't fucking meant to get along, at least not on the large scale.
Right. Well, yeah, and I think so, that there's, you know, you could talk about, there's a larger idea, and you have whatever larger idea that you want that's going to bring people together. And there was almost kind of a, it almost seemed like that there was a tactic going on here with this movement, that you throw out this larger idea that you want to have corporate money taken out of politics. And everybody could pretty much get on board with that. There was all kinds of people at this thing. There were, you know, there were professional people. Most of the people I saw were between the ages of, you know, 35 to 50. So there weren't, not like a lot of kids, not like a lot of teenagers or anything. So there's, you know, professional people. There were people in suits. There were hippies. There were all these different types of people, artists, musicians, everybody there. The thing was that they, after they talk about this idea about solidarity, what they start doing is they start putting in all these other agenda points. And it's these other agenda points that they're voting up and down. And what they would do is, of course, if you didn't agree with this particular agenda point, whatever it might have been, well, you were asked to not voice your dissent after, you know, whatever your opinion was made, not to voice your dissent in favor of solidarity. Because no matter what our disagreements are, we still all have to get along to push the main point. So it's kind of like whatever the group's agenda was on different, you know, other points, you either went along with it as part of the 99% to get corporate money out of politics, no matter, even if you disagreed with the other points, or you were considered part of that 1%. You were no longer part of the people.
I see. So in essence, it's kind of, I don't know, a political black sheeping?
Sort of. There was a point where, exactly that. There was a point, keep in mind that this is supposed to be, their kick is that they're trying to be apolitical. And what I mean by that is they're not in favor of either party necessarily. That's their thing. So they're saying, you know, where the Tea Party is conservative, is squarely in the corner of the conservative movement. The Occupy movement is trying to say that, no, in fact, we're not pushing any one political agenda or another. That it's politicians accepting corporate money that's a problem, and all the politicians do it. But while they're making that statement, they're suggesting that the Democratic Party, and more specifically President Obama, is less culpable than any other politician on this particular issue. That if, you know, our president basically, from their understanding, if the president could have his way, there'd be no corporate money involved in politics. And that's just bullshit, because, you know, he is getting as much corporate money from, you know, for his political campaign, for his political efforts, as any other politician. So he's just as culpable as anybody else. And there were some folks that showed up that had signs. One sign showed was a picture of FDR, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and said, you know, the sign said that this is a politician for the people. Okay? So Franklin Delano, you know, Delano Roosevelt, he's the, you know, Democratic Party's patron saint, basically. And then they had other signs that showed pictures of President Obama with a nice little Hitler mustache. Okay? And this sign says this, you know, this is a politician for the corporate fat cats. Well, they had people, there were no leaders to this thing. There's no one person actually, you know, getting involved and saying, we're running this and this is we're setting the agenda and everything else. But they have their organizers go up and talk to these people and tell these people that their signs were too divisive. Their signs were inflammatory. And here's the thing with that. The whole Occupy movement is supposed to be inflammatory. I mean, you're showing up in public spaces and saying, we're not going to leave. We're going to occupy this space for 24/7. That's an inflammatory effort. So to sit there and tell somebody that you don't want them to be inflammatory is kind of a little off-kilter to me. But I understand the point of saying, you know what, we don't want the message to be bogged down by politics. We'll also be unified on this particular issue. The problem with making the statement is, as this guy is talking about these people with these signs, there's some guy center stage talking to the crowd, and he has a sign in his hand that says, subpoena Bush Cheney on 9/11. Okay? So it's a political, his political, this guy had his sign, he'd been walking around with this sign all day, and none of these organizers said shit to him. So it was hypocritical. And I, of course, being there, you know, and being the kind of guy that I am, while I'm listening to this guy talk to these other people about their Obama signs, I pointed to him. I go, "You're going to give the same speech to this guy over here with the Bush change sign that's been walking around with it all day?" And actually, had some of it on videotape and everything else. And at first, the guy tried to tell me he couldn't see the sign. He didn't see the guy I was talking about. This guy was center stage holding a poster board, a safety orange poster board that had in black writing the words "Subpoena Bush Cheney" on 9/11. So when he finally did acknowledge that he saw it, then he actually stepped up to take care of it, to get this guy to take his sign down, and gave him the same speech, which I thought was cool, that, you know, he actually lived up to what he was saying, okay? But then the very next day, I hear on the news is they got some guy down there in a George Bush mask in a suit with all these corporate logos all over it. And this guy's speaking to the news on behalf of the occupation movement. So it's kind of like, what is it? Are you apolitical and focused on a certain, you know, certain goal, getting corporate money out of politics, which all politicians are culpable, all politicians are guilty of, or is it really just this is the progressive left answer to the Tea Party?
Yeah, that's a solid question. I mean, first I'm kind of curious, where I don't disagree, the corporate money is definitely a major problem within our current political structure. I question if that's not really a straw man to what the real problem is. I'm just thinking, you know, we are talking here about two very radically different extremes, the Tea Party, the ultra-conservative, and the ultra-liberals.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that, any amount of diplomacy is ever going to give either side a fair voice. And what that then comes back to in my mind and returns to in my mind is that there's a hard line drawn there. There are two different types of people, at least in a broad sense, that, you know, in a very broad sense, you can make a hard line categorization of a person just in these two spectrums. Now, I'm not saying there aren't variants, like there's not the conservative liberal or the liberal conservative or whatever you want to say, but the pendulum sways both ways. The pendulum sways. Oh my God, I need to drink some more of this Heineken. The pendulum sways both ways, and it reaches its maximum peak at both sides of the swing, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. I want to point out, too, that the majority of the people were there, I think, were very middle of the road. I think they agreed with the idea that it should be an apolitical effort. So they didn't see themselves as conservative or progressive. They just considered themselves as seeing a government that was out of control, and they wanted to bring it back down into control. They wanted the people to be acknowledged by the government. So that's what I saw going on with the majority of the participants. But what I saw going on with the organizers was that there definitely was a political agenda that leaned left. I talked to a lot of people, and they were, if not overtly pro-Democrat, they were definitely overtly pro-Obama, which, you know, that's, and since they're the ones organizing it, they're the ones who are going to be pushing the pendulum in the direction they want it to go in. My thing with the Occupy movement is that what you're going to do is as they have this democratic process. I mean, there's a reason that our founding fathers didn't want a democratic process. They wanted a representative republic. That a democratic process means mob rule, basically. So what you do is you have, if 60% of the people vote that we're going to legalize abortion, let's say, well, then you disenfranchise 40%. And as you continue to disenfranchise that 40% or 30% or whatever it ends up being, you end up creating this disenfranchised movement. And they rise up now as the people not being listened to by the government. They have their own little Occupy, whatever situation going, and they do the same thing. And it's a cycle that happens over and over and over again. That basically you have continuous discontent. That's the thing that's going to happen. That is probably part of human nature, as you were pointing out. We just can't necessarily get along. What I think would be cool is these people, especially the folks occupying Wall Street, if one day they wake up while they're doing this and they realize that they've been at it for 3, 4, or 5 weeks, and during this time they've set up their own little society, that they have existed during this time outside of the rules of the social order. You know, they didn't go home. They didn't, you know, they didn't live in a house. They didn't pay rent. They didn't pay electric bills. They didn't do any of that stuff for, you know, a month coming up now. And that they could live like this. They could choose to just turn their back on the system permanently. And they just move it down the road someplace.
And I think that actually brings us to the heart of what we're talking about tonight, transgression.
Absolutely.
That's in fact what that is.
We got a caller on the line. Let me go ahead and bring this guy up and see if he's still on here. 111 area code. You're on the use. What's on your brain, man?
Hey, what's going on, Ben?
Hey, what's going on?
Hello? Yeah. Yeah, and I just wanted to comment on what you guys were saying here. I think with the Occupy movement, from what I can see, I mean, you apparently were out there. I haven't been out on the street, but I've listened to the organizers and I've seen quite a bit of the footage and so forth. And I support the idea. And I think what I'm seeing from it is it's not necessarily that they want to be apolitical. It's that they don't want they want to remove the corruption from politics. I think that when you see, you know, subpoena George Bush and Cheney, or at the same point, these people would probably say the same to you about, you know, let's look into the Supreme Court business now with Clarence Thomas's wife, and why isn't there some sort of a, an, you know, some sort of a rebuking or a reprisal for the Supreme Court to make sure that, you know, this isn't political on both sides. You know,
let's look into Obama's connection with the Weather Underground. Let's look into the situation going on with Chicago politics. So, and you're right, there are a lot of people that were down there that were very much like that. But the word apolitical was the word that was used, that was given to me by one of the organizers. Their effort is to be apolitical, meaning that they don't have a party affiliation, which is what they were telling these people who came down with the anti-Obama signs. It's just that they failed to necessarily put that message out to the people with the anti-conservative side. So.
Well, I don't think they did have a – I don't think they do, from what I'm seeing, have a party affiliation. They don't want one. I think what they want is the removal of corruption on any level out of government. And I think that, you know, if you saw their declaration of what they voted up and down on, and you know, get out of the other countries and the wars and the occupation territories that we're in, and you know, take the money out of politics, and they had a declaration that was quite long that I think most people would agree with. They want to get the idea across that we, as 99% of this country, need to come together and ask the right questions. We have to have the right ideas about what we want to change. Then we can discuss how we're going to change them, because you had a lot of ideas. You know, somebody was saying something about a $20 minimum wage, which is ridiculous. But the bottom line is, you know, you're going to get those kind of things, but before we can answer or solve a problem, we have to ask the right questions or have the right points. And the problem that goes on with the political system as it exists now is that everybody's talking at each other, and you've got all these different people who have their partisanship up, instead of just saying, you know, hey, we can find certain things that we agree about. We may not agree exactly on how we're going to fix it. Maybe we can find some agreement there, too. But we can definitely find things that are wrong that we know is wrong. And we can all say, hey, this is wrong. We want it gone. We don't care what party
you
are.
That's the spirit. That's the spirit of the Occupy movement. And that's the intent. That is the stated intent. As you've pointed out, it's on their documentation. It is their speaking points when they talk about what it is they're doing. And this is something I was there to help set the thing up for the morning. I actually hung out with the organizers and talked to them individually, and I was there to hear the different speeches. I went up on stage and gave a speech myself. So cool. I was there part of none, and I agree with you. That's absolutely their intent. And for the 99% of the people that are down there, the 99% of the people that are trying to be representative, the thing they want to do is get rid of corruption in government. My point, the only reason I pointed this out was – is that they tend to lean, the people that are organizing this, to the left. They tend to push to the left. While they see corruption in politics across the board on both sides of the aisle, they seem to think, or they seem to push the idea that the folks on the left side of the aisle are a little less corrupt than the folks on the right side of the aisle. The people who push the idea that there is, that it goes both ways, were more often talked down than the people who, and this is just, again, my observation being down there, listening to them speak, listening to them give speeches and everything else. I also saw the documentation, so I know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in spirit, in what they're talking about, they definitely, they do, you're absolutely right. Corruption has to be removed from the political system. The people have to recognize, and this is a point that was also made while I was down there, that the left politics and the right politics, the ideas, progressive and conservative, all of that, it's just propaganda. It's just
mm-hmm.
a way to hook people into this particular storyline, and that's hopefully the theme that they stick with. This was actually what they brought up, that it's really just corporate propaganda getting you to sway people's opinions along with the politicians. If they can stick to that theme, if they can stay pure to that purpose, then there's a hope of something going on. What I'm telling you is being there on the street, talking to these people,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them didn't see it that way. Okay, when I pointed out that President Obama was, you know, just as culpable as any other person during this discussion, I had a woman sit there and tell me I wasn't part of the 99%, that I was one of the 1%. So she had it in her head that it wasn't just the corporate fat cats that are 1%, it was anybody that disagreed with her left-leaning ideology that was 1%. And
right.
if they can't get over that political speed bump, they're not going to succeed. They're not going to have the solidarity they're expecting to achieve.
Well, I mean, did she actually say to you that you were part of the 1%, or did she say that
Absolutely.
You were part of the 99% that disagrees with me?
Sir, you are clearly part of the 1%, were her exact words.
Oh, well, then I don't think she gets the movement, because the idea, from what I've understood of what's going on there, is even if you disagree with the 99%, you are still part of the 99%, unless you,
right.
of course, are in the 1% who are trying to oppress the 99%. Just having a disagreement doesn't make you an oppressor to the 99%. It just means that you have a dissent in a particular area or a different opinion about the situation. So I don't think that she's in the right for saying that, but I don't think
right.
that anyone who disagrees with you automatically puts you in the 1%. You have there are many credentials that put you in the 1%. I don't think that's one of them necessarily.
Right,
I mean,
that's one of the things they're going to have to get over internally. Is they're going to have to keep people aware that the goal is getting corruption out of government, making the government
mm-hmm.
be behind the people and for the people, regardless of what your political agenda is. Until we get to that, and until we get corruption as much as possible, because it's never going to actually get all the way out. But as soon as we can get corruption out of the government, which is what the Occupy movement wants, which is what you could say the Tea Party wants to a certain extent, is to get corruption out of government, then you can start having actual political discourse. The issue is that they have to convince enough of their people down there on both sides that, hey, we need to put aside politics and focus on solutions. Now, the solution we talk about here on the news, and the solution we talk about on Eminent Mind, is just walking the fuck away from the system. The system itself is bloated and corrupt, and we think it's just crashing down anyways. So we just say, turn your back on it. But in the meantime, you know, I went down there to support the thing, and I still support it. It was kind of off-putting to see, you know, the push in one direction when the talk was apolitical, when the talk was, let's not have any type of party affiliation, but then, you know, there was this undercurrent of leaning in one particular direction.
Well, I think you have dichotomy happening as well, because everyone has a political undertone, but, you know, the movement itself is not necessarily, again, apolitical, but corruption out of government. And, you know, but, I mean, everybody's going to have their political perceptions about the way things go. And on what you said about, you know, walking away from the system, I would say, you know, I agree with Occupy Wall Street, and I agree with that approach too. I agree with some sort of resource-based people, or people gathering together in some sort of a community organization to try to starve out the corporations as much as possible, too. I think it's a two-pronged approach. I think if we take it from both angles, they're really going to have their panties in a bunch, because if we stop buying their products and we start using our own resources as much as we use our vote at the poll to stop this kind of corruption from existing, somebody's going to have to pay attention sooner or later, because they're not going to be able to make money off of the 315 million people in this country. And that's where the bottom line is, because, you know, one of the things Occupy Wall Street does is, you know, show the idea that, you know, the people that are in the 1% really don't care what we think. Because there was a picture of people toasting with champagne up in one of the towers while those people were protesting on the ground. They really don't care right now what we think as American citizens. We need to make them care. One way or the other,
right.
We need to make them care. And money will make them care, because you know they care about their money. That's the one thing
right.
You can be sure, you know. So,
right, you know,
right.
If I could just chime in here real quick, there's a couple of observations that I've made just listening to this conversation that the two of you folks, gentlemen, are having. The first thing is the idea of taking corruption out of politics. I think that by its own nature, politics can never not be corrupted, because it focuses on one specific thing getting a specific result. It would be the same thing as going into a laboratory with the mindset that, you know, you're going to get X effect. And so everything that you do, you work towards building this one end result, this one bottom line. And I think what we really have to get to here as people, as human beings, is removing this idea of the bottom line, that the final result, the end, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, the end result. We've kind of all forgotten that the importance of life is the actual journey through it, not where you end up at the end of it. I think that's the whole downfall of our entire society, in fact, is that, you know, we are so focused on where we'll be at the end of everything, you know, with, will the all the proper funeral arrangements be made? Will you know, all of our children get their, you know, what we feel they deserve from their will? It's all about that end result, and in preparing and focusing for that end result, what we're losing is the actual experience of the journey through.
Well, I would agree with you.
With our political system, whenever you turn to a third party. When you say you have certain rights, you have certain freedoms, and then you turn to a third party, any politician, no matter what their political stripe, and say, now go out and apply my freedoms and apply my rights and defend my rights for me, you've invited corruption into the system. So you're absolutely right. You're never going to get corruption out of politics, because you're going to a used car salesman and saying, here's my freedoms, here's my rights, take care of them for me, instead of you taking care of it yourself. So there's always going
to
be
corruption. Well, I think that's the idea of what democracy is supposed to be. I mean, for the people, by the people, with the people. It's supposed to be the people taking care of themselves. And the truth of the matter is, we've allowed all this to take place as much as anything, because we've had the opportunity to turn around and say stop. And the people haven't paid enough attention to taking care of their own rights. I mean, you and I
right.
may sit here and be very, very involved in this and you know, what goes on in government or politics or social situations, geopolitical situations, but there are a lot of people who could care less, even right now, as the country crumbles around their feet and they're sitting there talking about, you know, Survivor or something, you know, in their conversations. They have no real concern about the people that they're putting into office or what they stand for or taking hold of their own, you know, political situation to any degree. And I think that, you know, what the other gentleman said about, you know, us being, you know, very goal-oriented. I think you need a certain amount of goal orientation, but you're right. The process of life is journey-oriented, and we do need to get back to that to a degree. And as far as a, you know, taking corruption out of politics, if we took our responsibilities as citizens, we could take out a lot of the corruption in politics. Maybe there's no making a perfect system, but we could take out a lot of what we've allowed to get away from us, which is corporations buying off politicians to do what they want to do and leaving us all high and dry. And there's no reason. This is our country. See, these people say Occupy Wall Street. I've said for a long time, America first. I mean, it comes down to the same kind of idea, but you know, we really do need to start to get to the idea of putting America and Americans first. And the rest of these people, pardon my French, can go to hell. Okay, because I don't give a damn about a multinational corporation. You know, you want to do business, you have the right to do business. Go to Indonesia and stay there. I'm worried about what's going on with my people, you know?
I could say it better myself.
I was going to say, it's your land is my land. You know, the whole fucking deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right on. I couldn't say it better myself. It's about responsibility to the responsible. So it's about, you know, it's about getting out there and doing some things. The question I asked, as he was making a statement, he's dropped off. The question I would ask basically is, if you can't convince these people to stop watching Survivor and everything else, how long do you try before you just go, fuck it, I'm going off to do my own thing? How often, you know, how long do you sit there and try to struggle with these people before you just go, you know what, I'm just going to deal with people who actually have their heads out of their asses and stuff instead of trying to deal with all these other idiots?
To be honest with you, I honestly think that... you know, when it comes to a point that you've reached that brick in the road that you just can't cross because there's all of these barriers that protect these fucks that are sitting there watching Survivor, that's when you go ahead and you cross that line. You know, you transgressed.
Right.
You know,
go ahead.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead, man.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, it comes a point where it's time to break the rules. You know, if the rules serve such a good purpose, then they'll find the strength to pick themselves up and do something about it.
No, I think I'm in agreement that there was an advertisement. I don't know if it ever was actually ran. I don't know if it was a spoof. I know the Church of Satan was running this ad for a little while. They wanted it to be an Apple ad. Apple's thing for a while was Think Differently. And their Think Differently ad had Antoine LaVey, you know, with the snake wrapped right around his shoulder, whatever. And that was the thing they were trying to push for Apple, Think Differently. I think it's time. We've gotten to a point where it's no longer a matter of just thinking differently. We have to act differently. We have to choose to transgress. And when you ask the question, well, when do you start? When do you do it? Any fucking time you can get away with it. Any time you need to push those limits, any time you need to cross that line, you should cross it. Because, I mean, there are plenty of people out here. I mean, the game is no longer fair.
The what is no longer fair?
The game. The game is no longer fair. You know, you're told as children that if you follow the rules and do what you're told and everything else, well, then you'll get certain benefits. You'll be rewarded for these things, and we know that's bullshit. When you look at history, the people who gained the greatest rewards are the ones who took the risks, who are the ones who transgressed, the ones who said, no, fuck the rules, fuck those things. I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to give it a shot, and either I'm going to go down in flames or I'm going to be successful. And it's come to that. It's come to that time where it's a matter of, you know, fuck the rules. You need to start, you just think about you and yours and making some shit happen. Give it a shot.
Right on. Absolutely. I mean, you can either sit back and say, you know, hey, these guys are absolutely right and this is the way it should be, or you can act on it right now, you know. Something's going on, fuck it, push the bar. I mean, life is do or die anyway. Am I right? I mean, what do we really struggle for? We struggle for more time. That's our big struggle, more time. You know, we know eventually our time comes to an end. The argument for whether or not there's an eternity afterwards, it's redundant. It doesn't matter for the current situation. So, you know, does it matter if you die in 15 minutes trying to accomplish something you love and want deeply, or if you prolong your suffering 80 years and never cross that barrier?
Right, absolutely. Now it's about doing for yourself and actually experiencing the living life. We talk about these people that are in power. Well, these people are in power because they chose not to be followers. They chose not to. When people told them just do what you're told and everything will work out, they didn't take that advice. They said, no, I'm going to wrest power from the hands of those that have it and take it for myself. So.
Right on.
Yeah, it's just a matter of everybody waking up and going, you know, the only reason these people are leaders is because we consented to be followers, and we could choose not to be. We could make a choice.
Yeah, I think the thing of it is that it's not even a choice of making a choice. You need to choose. You know, there's not the choice of I'm going to make a choice. Or I'm not going to make a choice. This is you need to choose. Which side of the line do you stand on? You know, it's interesting because I today went back over that little Xenophiles tape that I did on to form a soul, and I got to really thinking about some of the things that I had said in that show there, thinking about what I meant by them, and. Knowing who you are, what you stand for, and, you know, kind of having your own personal right, if I can put it there, is, you know, it's more important than anything to know that, you know, you can go to sleep at night with ease because the choices you made were your own without pressures or guilt. I think that's the freedom every man seeks.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. It's not the length of time you have, it's the quality that in the manner you get to spend it. And what we're seeing, I guess, based on the system's vision of how we should be spending our time, you have fewer and fewer options. And it's just a matter of us taking those options, choosing, you know, it's just like you said, it's not wondering if you have a choice, it's doing something, it's choosing.
Right on. So I know we were going to talk a bit about this, but I believe you made a suggestion in getting into something else tonight as well when we were talking earlier. And though for the life of me and a dozen Heinekens prior, I'm having a hard time kind of pulling that together. So remember?
We were going to talk about the Occupy movement. We're going to talk about transgressing.
Right.
When do you make that move? What should you do? Off the top of my head, I think those are the only two things we had discussed talking about tonight.
Right on. I think it was really cool that we got that caller. I'm assuming he's not from our normal circles, or maybe he is.
I didn't like the fact.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I really like the fact that so many that run in our circles are becoming so interested in what's going on now. I mean, it's nothing like giving a bunch of pissed off hellions something to focus on to really make a difference, you know? So, please.
It's interesting to see these different messages. It's interesting to see how these different things are reverberating through the memes of our society. It's funny that I'm just saying that there seems to be a vibe that's going around. So I'm not taking credit or claim for any of these things, but We post an article on Eminent Mind about time, about the use of time and time being treated as a commodity. And on the television tonight, while between football, you know, the quarters of the football game, they're running this advertisement for a movie where that idea is literally the case, that your amount of time, you're given 25 years, and when you want to purchase something, well, then they take minutes or seconds off your life in order for you to get whatever it is you want. So, like, the example they had was a cup of coffee, it was worth 4 minutes of your life. So it's weird that we're plugged into something, and that's what's going on. It's not just you know, us talking about these ideas, but they're coming up in all these different areas. Like, we're actually moving towards something. So it should be interesting just to see what's going on. Another kind of thing that kind of popped up, you and I had some exchanges and some interaction with different religious movements, different types of organizations and things like that. And we pushed an idea where the organization itself should be more engaged and more involved in how that organization is structured and how that organization, how people move up in the ranks in that organization and what have you. And that distressed leadership of that organization, we found ourselves out of that type of environment. It's interesting that if you go to Eminent Mind right now, the article I posted is there's a person who posted in a forum, and he's having the same sort of discussion in the organization he's involved in that we were having about how you've got these internet-based philosophical or theological organizations that they have their leaders, they have their goals, they have their interactions online or what have you, and that is it. And that it's coming to a point where that's not enough. That's not what these people are looking for. It's artifice. It's a facade. And that he was clamoring for the leaders of these things to start giving, you know, sway to their individual members, to go out into the real world, to actually organize amongst themselves, to actually set up their own structures for initiation and advancement. And again, you know, it's just, I think, the vibe that people want to start having more control of their lives. When you push a person, when you restrict a person more and more and more, the more restrictions you put on a person, the more desperately he wants to live his own life. And I think it's what's going on just in our society in general. We're experiencing so many restrictions that there's now a desperation. There's this underswell, this growing urge to retake control, retake responsibility.
Right. Well, I mean, honestly, one of the things about the idea of a utopia or some form of paradise that was always disturbing to me was the idea that there would be nothing that I had to struggle for. There would be nothing that was a hard choice. There would be nothing that, I may fuck up on. That ultimately, no matter what I do, because it's this paradise or this utopia, every move I make is okay because it's perfect. It's just exactly the way I want it. And in itself, it's kind of self-defeating. I mean, you know, that whole statement, who wants to live forever? It's the same kind of mentality that I'm talking about here.
Right on.
So I guess what I'm saying is that ultimately we figure out that having things our way always to the point where it's like automatically set up that this is our way and you know, you have to abide by this because this gives you this glorious end result here, the quote-unquote American dream, which we all found out was a crock of horse shit that burst after 200 years. We come back down to, well, you know, if, you know, we make our stands here and we do these things and we take responsibility for ourselves, that life, in fact, gains back something more precious, something more meaningful.
Well, I think there was a time when the American dream, whatever that actually meant, it meant something. I think there was a time when you're talking about people, when you're talking about the early stages of our country, where it was, you know what, if you want it, all you got to do is go west. And you go fucking west, you find whatever it is you want, a plot of land, you build yourself a house, you grow your own food, you do whatever you're going to do. And if you can hold on to it, if you can fight for it and you can make it yours, then it's yours. But you're living life. Now this idea of the American dream, it's been standardized and been given a corporate trademark, and it's bullshit anymore. You know, you can't go out and buy a house and buy a piece of land. You can rent it from the government for the rest of your life if you want to, but you don't own that shit. And is ownership really something that you really want to accomplish? Why do we want to own a piece of land? Why can't I just be on a piece of land until I fucking die? You know, grow my own food, do my own thing, and, you know, fuck everybody else if they don't want to let me do it or whatever. You know, why have we given up these rights? Why have we given up these, and I'm not talking about American freedoms, I'm just talking about inherent freedoms. You know, live your life, do your thing, and take the risk. And if you fail, you know, well, you serve them as an example to everybody else, I guess, you know. You shouldn't have ate that plant, man. It killed your ass. Whatever it is, you serve as an example.
Right. Exactly. I trial by fire constantly. I think it's one of the most beautiful notions that has ever dawned on our, well, fuck, I want to call it primate-oriented mind, but I think it's more reaching towards the lizard brain than anything.
Right. The idea of a paradise, I agree with you. The idea of that kind of utopian existence where you want for nothing. Well, what if I want conflict? What if I want a challenge? What if I want the chance of failure? You know, what if I want something stupid to be painful? You know, I'm not going to want that utopia. I'm not going to want that paradise because that's not life. And, you know, and it's the problem we have in our society now is you got too many motherfuckers that think they're entitled to something, think they should just have shit handed to them. And that's not the case. In life, the best lives were led by people who took what they wanted, who took the things they needed, who went out and made it happen for themselves. Fucking live life like a pirate, man. I mean, that's probably where we're going with all this.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with that, but I would like to offer up the opposite as well, and that, you know, the truth is we're fooling ourselves in the things that we want because we do want that conflict. We do want the blood mayhem. We do want the war and whatever else comes along with actually transgressing things. You know, people want to go over and fuck the neighbor's wife if she'll do it. You know, people want to tell that lie if that means that they get away with whatever it is. People want to do these things. But they lie to themselves and tell themselves that, no, that's not what they want. They want to live a good life, and they want all of these things to be fair and equal and I don't know, egalitarian for lack of any other term.
I'll say, well, what is a good life anymore? You know, how do you define that? And do you define what a good life is, or are you letting somebody else define what a good life is? We got another caller on the line. Let me go and bring him on. 619 area code, you are on the ooze. It's on your brain, man.
Don't you fuck me. I fuck
you. Oh, it's Zach. What's up, dude?
Oh, I guess he just wanted to listen to the show. My bad. If he calls back in, I'll just let him sit on mute, I guess.
Actually, I don't think so. It's a kind of a parody of that movie Silence of the Lambs, you know, the killer, what was his name, Buckaroo Bill?
Yeah, Buffalo Bill, yeah.
Yeah, Buffalo Bill, that's it. I said Buckaroo, but close enough. Yeah, that's the song playing in the background. It's you know, Zach's been so charming lately as to entertain us with his rigged hermaphrodite type freak dancing. I guess he just felt the show needed to be spiced up a little bit with it.
And he did a video on YouTube. If people haven't seen this video yet, I'm sure everybody's seen it. That's sitting in the chat room right now. He did a video on YouTube, and if he's in the chat room, he should type in the link where he's got this blonde wig on, and he's basically mocking Venus Satanis. And I hadn't seen the Venus Satanis video, but
it is so. When I actually went and saw the video that he was you know mimicking, it was so spot on. It wasn't, you know, he was just, you know, using the same mannerisms and saying the same things that this chick had said. It was hardly an exaggeration. Zach's tits are smaller. That was the only thing I think that was a little bit different. I mean, this woman is just so vapid at talking about her blonde hair and talking about the divine feminine. And I wonder if she has a clue that Lilith is referred to in mythology as having dark hair. I wonder if she has a clue that the blonde hair, the blonde woman, was considered a more pure version, the 2.0 woman, Eve. So little thought going on in those videos, and Zach's video on this is just hilarious.
Yeah, that by itself is, something I find entirely ironic, but I think he did a good job kind of framing that out for everybody, so I'll just kind of shut up right now. Sorry, man. Like I said, dude, at my mom's house, already pounded shit, at least 12 beers and several other recreational items, so I'm hanging in here, having a good time, tired of dealing with this fucking world's bullshit and everybody else thinking that it's required of me to conform to their standards. So, where were we? How busy is the chat room anyway? I can't see shit.
Yeah, because TC's not online tonight, so he can't see what's going on. There are 4, 6, 8, 10, it looks like 11 people other than myself in the chat room. All but three of them are logged in, and they're talking it up. They're talking about naked dancing on, I don't know what the hell they're talking about, and Tropical Menem and Zach. I don't know what's going on there.
It's become a fetish this past week in the Sin chat room for people to tuck their junk and fucking dance to that song. So,
awesome. That's crazy.
All right. If everybody that was participating and it could just learn to tuck their junk properly, I think that it would have been a little more humorous to me.
Hey, it looks like somebody muted Morgan for breaking the rules. I don't know what's up with that. It was some admin thing. TC, do you know anything about how that works?
No, I don't. I can't imagine what rule Morgan would have broken or why she would be muted.
Yeah, that's
so
not. I don't know.
They'd have to call in and actually explain what's gone down for me to make any kind of commentary on it.
347-989-1371 is the call-in number, and then in the Interrogist is asking if I saw his post on protest, and I you'll have to put a link up someplace to it. I've been not online as much as I used to be online. I've been kind of busy, so unfortunately, no. I haven't seen the link on protest.
Right. Well, I think part of your whole process with disconnecting here is really disconnecting, unplugging, so to speak. So I think that's one thing that's definitely commendable, something that people should really think about. You know, it's nice to be able to go and hang out online or whatever, but the question is, how many times are you doing that when you could be doing something else?
Yeah, does real life happen online? I think that's something we actually talked about tonight was, you know, along the lines of the post on eminentmind.info from this other guy, and along the lines we're talking about transgressing. Unless you're hacking websites, unless you're doing something like that, there's not a lot of transgression you can pull on the internet. But going out into the real world, you know, getting engaged with human-to-human contact with other people and everything else, just talking about how that's a potential for growth.
that that's a way for you to get out, you know, to do something and to actually have an impact on your environment. And I think that what we see going on, some of the things we've been talking about is leading to that, is getting yourself as an individual as squared away as possible so that when you go out and deal with other people, when you start talking to other people and getting together, you're able to really do some shit, that you're not a burden to any person around you, but rather you're able to, you know, link together as a whole and build up some momentum, make some, you know, make some shit happen. And, you know, we're looking at a situation down the road, we think, where it may be necessary that you'll have to have this core group of people that you rely on, this core group of people that you look to for mutual support. And it would be nice to start seeing these kinds of things develop.
Yeah, I definitely would say it'd be excellent. I'm kind of actually kind of laughing because, this post, and I honestly haven't gotten a chance to check out what was actually put up in it, but I'm assuming if it's along the same vein as what we were talking about, now about a year ago?
Let me interrupt you real quick. Interrogus is saying something about how he was on topic and what the fuck, man. Dude, I have no idea what you're talking about. So I'm not sure if you're meaning for me to see something or thinking that I'm keeping you from saying something or whatever. I'm not even, other than looking at the chat, I'm not pressing any buttons or anything. So if anybody's getting cut off or whatever's going on, I don't know what the deal is. I'm just driving the bus, but I'm not actually pressing any of the buttons. So if you want to call in, 347-989-1371, you know, we can hear you out directly. Other than that, man, I don't know what you guys are talking about there in the chat room.
Yeah, see, here's what I'm going to do. I'm gonna go ahead and call Daryl outright because I know he'll respond better to this. And I'm going to tell him that, if he wants everybody to understand what the hell he's talking about, that he needs to call 347-989-1371 and, you know, man up. You know, it's not enough to look like Edward Norton, to actually have to act like you're in the Fight Club.
Okay, so I guess what he's pissing his panties about is, he asked a question in the chat room, and I didn't pay attention or didn't see it. Because, you know, I'm busy doing a radio show, guy. But if you want to call in to the talk show, 347-989-1371, and ask your question on the phone, I'll be happy to address it, if that was the issue you were actually talking about.
Right on. Right. Skype is your friend, man. So further, kind of moving forward, transgressing. Do you? Honestly, you know, people have to say there. You know, there's got to be some kind of limitation to it, right? I mean, you can't just run around doing whatever the fuck you want. If everybody did that, well, I mean, there'd be a lot less people in this world, but they might be happier people.
Consider the amount of Darwin Awards that we passed out. Let's say the government were to sit there and go, you know what, you guys are right. All of you are right. We should just back the fuck off. No more government. We're done. Go fucking figure it out for yourself. Everybody's on their own. You know, what would that world be like the next day? You know, how soon would there just be a thinning out of the population?
And I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing, man. To be honest with you, if I could just find a little corner to tuck myself in until they were done fucking each other up, I mean, it would prove to be a wonderful thing to me.
Right on. There's some shit going down in the chat room, dude. I guess I have to address and look at this. No, man, Daryl, we're trying to get you to call in. So if you want to call in, 347-989-1371, it would be great to have you or anybody else who's in the chat room call in. Now, to the question, if you protest according to government rules, is it a protest? Yes, if it's a protest, even if it's by government rules, I'm not sure. If it weren't a protest, you wouldn't use the word protest. It might not be as effective as a protest that isn't by government rules, and I agree with that, but it's a protest. Preferably, my thing would be, you know, if you're sitting there going, if you're playing the game the way somebody else wants you to play it, but you don't like the rules, well, what good is it going to be for you to play by the rules if you want to actually see the game changed? So I agree with that idea.
And my question is, if you want to see the game changed, then why even play that game in the first place?
Right, right. Why not just, I'm not playing Monopoly with you people. I've got life to play, and I'm going to go do that. Exactly.
That's exactly right. You know, guess who, motherfucker?
All right, I'm the only one rolling the dice, but that just makes it easier to win.
What's that?
And then if I'm the only one rolling the dice, well, that makes it easier to win. So,
right.
You know,
well,
do your thing.
You're certain people we know. Honestly, most people, man, they would set the rules to kind of stack against themselves. So if they're the only one rolling the dice, they're the one that's most likely to lose.
Right, right. But it's, you know, if you're taking the risk, if you're just out there doing whatever it is you're going to do, even if nobody sees the spectacular failure you end up having, or if that's the case, you still went out doing what you wanted to do without those restrictions, without somebody else telling you you could or couldn't do it. You just went and did it. And I think that's part of the thing we're talking about with transgression, about making that decision that you're no longer going to play by somebody else's rules, that you're going to start seeing, you know, what it is you can do, what it is you can get away with, and whatever that might be, in whatever form you take. And I don't think it should be a contest either. That would be ridiculous in and of itself. It's, you know, that it's not a matter of, you know, if one person's version of transgressing is he's stealing copy paper from the copy machine at work, and another person's ideal of transgressing is corporate embezzlement, you know, it's still to whatever your comfort zone is, whatever it is you're doing, you know, your thing is you're smoking pot, you know, instead of you're saying, you know, fuck the rules, I'm going to smoke pot or whatever it is you do. Here in Texas, if you decide to sodomize your girlfriend, you know, that's breaking the rules. So that's just the way it works and everything else. And if that's what you want to do, then break the fucking rule. That's what I say.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and to me, the thing of it is that along with the fact that you should only transgress within your comfort zone, so to speak, is you have to be prepared that the person who's not stealing copy machine paper but embezzling corporate is going to turn around and call you a pussy, and you have to be okay with that. You know, you have to be okay with that, or, you know, raise the bar. It's your choice. If you're not okay with that, I would say that's actually kind of an indicator that you need to raise the bar, that, you know, fuck stealing the copying paper. Instead, what you're going to do is steal the copying paper, the toilet paper, and fucking, I don't know, white out all the important documents on the corporate executive's desk.
Right. Well, you don't want to reject society's standards just to embrace some asshole standards. You want to set your own standards. So it shouldn't matter what other people's judgment is of you based on, you know, what it is you're doing or not doing. It's all about what you got going on. And are you successful at it? Are you doing for yourself? Are you happy in what it is you're doing? It would be ridiculous to take on somebody else's standards just because he thinks he's doing more than you are.
Right. I mean, I love the old notion, I'm better than you because I can run this much faster. Well, you being able to run that much faster might mean you hit a mine before I do, you know, trudging up the enemy shore. So, it's not always a good thing to be the top of the line, the brightest and smartest, you know?
Right on. So call the number, 347-989-1371. I thought we were going to get, with the Occupy movement and everything else, I thought we were going to do a full 2 hours on this. So I'm kind of trying to, I'm scratching my head trying to think of what else to talk about. The Intera just logged out. I wonder what's up with that. Maybe he thinks that the show was over. We're at the hour.
He might have thought the show was over, and it might also be, I know if you're logged into Tiny Chat, or not Tiny Chat, fuck man, I got my social networks all mixed up, but if you're logged into the BTR chat room for an hour straight, it actually goes to where you can't hear the show anymore, and you have to reload it to actually finish it off what you're hearing.
All right, okay, cool. Well, if you can't hear me right now, go ahead and log out and log back in, and then that will take care of it, apparently. Yeah, but there you go. Maybe he's calling in. That would be great. But just, I haven't gotten a call in from him yet, so we'll wait on that. In the meantime, I don't know, what's caught your attention lately on the Internet? What have you seen lately amongst the usual suspects, that is, other than, you know, Zach Venus Santana's impression? Anything you think's going on that you wanted to address?
Yesterday during the 1 o'clock show, I did talk a little bit about thinkers and doers and how you have to think before you do. So, and thinking itself is actually kind of doing. That was sort of a response to, well, someone that at this point I'm no longer pitching, because they just keep getting butthurt every time I make a statement on their ideas. I don't know if you caught that video or not, but
yeah, I think it did. Yeah,
it's just one more example, in my opinion, of somebody trying to hold you up to their standard and say, you don't meet my standard.
So we got another caller calling in from the 111. It's all ones, the phone number. So let me go ahead and bring this gentleman back on, or whoever this is. All right, hang on a second. Maybe they're on. Maybe not.
Hello?
All right, you're on the U's, man. What's on your brain?
Yeah, no, I had called you before. I got cut off because my machine went haywire. We're connected through the whole cable system, and we're having storms where I am, so it gets a little nutty at times. I wanted to comment on what you guys were talking about the transgressing thing. I agree with you, but I think more thinking outside of the box than, you know, stealing paper or toilet paper, if it's going to be destructive in its nature. And it's not necessarily what somebody else's standard is as much as the positive standard for yourself. If it's going to be destructive, I don't see that as being a way of moving yourself forward. If it's going to be productive and finding a way or finding people that you can communicate with and connect with, that you can go forth with and create something better for yourself, I think that's a perfect way of doing something, thinking outside of the box and moving yourself forward. And I said it before, you know, starving these people out to a certain degree, because I believe in a two-prong approach to it. I think that you can take it on their level and do the Occupy Wall Street thing. But at the same point in time, we really do start, you know, community-based societies, resource-based societies, people finding ways of doing it for themselves, people who think in the same light, if you will, and finding ways to help your fellow American and yourself at the same time, making yourself move forward and taking the people that are screwing you and shutting them out, you know, you're starving them out. Because I don't think that, you know, if you get Machiavellian here, this is exactly what these people are doing on the top. they're looking at you and saying, you know, screw you, I'm going to go do my own thing, and I'm going to rip off the government and pay off the politicians and make all the money that I can, and you're going to get shut out of the system. So I think when we brought up the examples of
transgression, we're actually talking about not living by standards, questioning the rules, questioning the restrictions, and making some decisions as to what actually works for you, then going with those behaviors versus just obeying as part of your natural response, because it's not your natural response to obey. It's a learned response. So when we gave those little examples, they're kind of tongue-in-cheek, because I don't think anybody here on the radio actually wants to say we're doing this or we're doing that. What we might be really doing in our private lives, whether whether it's legal or illegal, we don't want to necessarily have those strategies out in the world. So, when we say do something stupid like X, we don't mean that X should be the thing that you go out and do. But, again, it's a matter of, and this is something that we've been talking about, at some point, when you talk about working for your fellow American, when you talk about doing things for your neighbors and everything else, well, our strategy has been, at least what we've been discussing, is doing as much as you can to prepare yourself for a situation where the system was no longer there to provide for your needs, whatever those needs might be, food, water, that kind of thing. Preparation of self, that's the one thing you do. The next step would be to deal with people, talk to people about what's going on, and see who's listening. See who actually has an interest in being self-responsible, being self-determined, and see if they're actually going to do things for themselves. Those are the people you want to deal with. Because when you're talking about the populace as a whole here in the United States, there's a significant number, the majority, easily the majority, who have no interest in doing for themselves, that want to be reliant on the system, that need that system in place to take care of themselves, and have no interest about being self-responsible. And then you have to decide, I think, not to deal with those kinds of people. You have to go ahead and just, do for yourself and do for those people that are doing for themselves, people that you can actually deal with and you can count on to be there for you rather than the people who are going to be reliant on the system. And I guess he dropped off. Hang on a second. We got another caller. All right. Is this the Interrogist?
It is.
All right, man. What's going on?
Well, I guess my question's already been talked about and kind of answered, but I guess I'm just calling in to save face.
Well, we appreciate you calling in, man. And I haven't had a chance to check out your post. I haven't been on the internet very much. I think your question is well placed. Is it really a protest if it obeys the rules of the people you're protesting against? On the surface, yes. But in essence, why would you play the game by their rules? If you don't like the game, if you don't like the way the rules are set against you, why even play the game? So I think that your point is well founded.
Well, the rest of the equation would be crime, because in my opinion, crime would be the ultimate protest, because that means you're not playing their game. So for me, if they say we're going to put up this tape and you can wave your futile sign, for me, that's not really a protest. When you go ahead and you do what you would naturally do, that is an actual protest.
Right, when you're talking about people, too, that are criminalizing more and more things, they're placing more and more restrictions, pretty soon you don't have the option to do these things. So when we're talking about – you're talking about crime, we're not necessarily talking about immoral behavior, whatever that means or what have you, but actually, just saying, fuck you and fuck your rules. If I'm going to express myself, I'm going to express myself in the manner that I feel will be most effective, regardless if I have your permission to do so or not.
Right.
So you're actually – that type of thing you're talking about. They put up that tape and say, you can protest here. No, fuck that. I'm going to spray paint this wall, and that's my way of protesting.
Right, but I would add to that, when you said not doing something immoral, I would also define morality for myself as well and completely ignore
yourself. Exactly. Exactly. I totally agree with that.
We're on the same page.
Right on.
So how have you been, man? I haven't heard from you in a while.
I took a leave of absence when I got myself martyred, or whatever you want to call it, on sin. I hung around for a minute and I took a break, and I'm back, I guess.
Cool.
So,
right. Well, I'm just curious, if you got yourself martyred, then how are you still here? Is it
coming? Electronically. But you know what I mean. There's a lot of butt hurt and whatnot, and I guess everybody's over it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, man. I mean, that's part of the whole learning process. You sometimes have to hit that stage of butt hurt, you know. And you've been one that the second you actually figure out that, you know, something's wrong, you really stop and look at it and go, oh, wait a minute, why is this wrong? So I'm guessing you've done nothing but grow from that.
Oh, definitely. I try to grow or learn something from any experience.
Beautiful.
And I think that's the essence of everything we're talking about is not just accepting what you're told, but actually questioning why or is it true? Does that actually apply to me? Is it something that I can apply to myself? Is it necessary for me to do so? So, you know, no, man, I've always been a big fan. Very cool.
Yeah, I found that essence in myself when I was very young, when I could not stand for someone to say to me, because I said so. And that's just not a reason. You know, I want a reason.
Right, because you said so.
Well, you know.
Man, I'm a couple shades off, so don't mind me. But it's good to have you calling in, Daryl. It's nice to see you back.
Thank you very much.
And so, transgressing. You know, I honestly myself have had one hell of a week. I wasn't sure if I was going to actually talk about this at all this weekend, but you know, I guess I'm going to because it's one form of transgression that can actually happen. Recently, I had a person from the Department of Children and Family Services show up at my house because my ex and I had a big disagreement. She decided she was going to try to teach me a lesson. And they came there with a little container and, you know, rubber gloves and a droplet asking me for a urine sample. And, well, for those of you who know me, you know what that might have quite implied. And I simply said, fuck off. And so far I'm living free and I'm actually figuring out as I'm looking through everything that I may have actually inadvertently through my own adversity saved myself a ton of grief. So long story short, transgression does work.
Indeed.
It seems that there are a lot of organizations, especially in the left-hand path, for whom the idea of transgression, they try to ritualize it, that you would go out and they would encourage you to do certain things, and it was a way of breaking away from the standards, you know, a way of convincing you in your mind. I don't care who you are, the way we are raised in our society, there's this idea that if you commit a wrong act, whatever that word means, wrong, if you commit a wrong act, there's going to be some authority looking on you. There's going to be some judgment, some punishment. And coming to the conclusion in your mind that you can act, and there may be risk, there may be consequence, but you might also get away with it. You know, there might not be punishment, especially for a lot of the things you're told are wrong. So, you know, seeing, you know, these different, you know, these other organizations, some of the material I've read on the ONA, some of the rituals for the initiations for ancient witch cults, things like that, all involve some sort of breaking of taboos. And I think that's part of what, you know, is involved in transgression. When you realize that, you know, especially political speech, breaking the rules, you know, not doing what you're told, not doing what is expected of you, garners more attention, lends more power to your voice than being at the designated protest zone and saying what you're supposed to say.
Absolutely, man. I think that's actually a direct symptom of something that other people carry, which is what I like to called the envy syndrome. You know, they look at you and they go, "Oh my God, he did that? And what happened? How is that possible? If I did that, this, and this would have happened here."
Right.
So it definitely gives some power because it hangs them in a balance. They want to know, you know, could I get away with that? If I went that way, could I get away with that? So, yeah, it certainly adds some power to it.
So the whole seems to be predicated on the idea of standing in line. I mean, one of the first things you learn in the public school system is how to stand in line. Keep your hands to yourself, stand in line, and wait. And when we get into actual society, more often than not, when some guy cruises past the line and goes right up to the front of the line, right up to the checkout person or the ticket counter or whatever it is, they get serviced by whoever's behind that glass because that person's been told not to make waves, to just let the customer's always right. And if nobody stops that guy from going to the front of the line, he gets serviced, he gets taken care of, and he moves on. Your chump ass is still standing in line waiting for your turn. And this is the mentality in our society I think we have to get over, that we have to get past. Or let me put that another way, that those of us who are seeking some advantage, that's the advantage. That's the key to advantage, that we're willing to take that risk. We're willing to transgress where others are not.
Bingo. That actually kind of comes right back around to what I was talking about with the end result not necessarily being the important part of the entire thing, but the journey instead. You know, getting to the end of that line, getting service, that's just a little fucking whatever instant gratification, but the actual, you know, confidence that, hey, I just walked in front of all these fucking people right up to the counter and grabbed my shit, that's where the lessons learned.
Right. Right.
So,
the call in number, let me throw the call in number out there real quick, 347-989-1371. If you want to call in and discuss anything we've been talking about or ask questions about anything you've been seeing going on, because there's been a lot. There's been a lot of little weird things going on YouTube and everything else that I've seen going on, and a lot of Internet activity. Or if you want to talk about what's going down here in Austin on the 29th, we can talk about that too. Whatever, man. The number is 347-989-1371.
What is happening on the 29th, dude?
I gave the number back. Did I? 347-989-1371. Oh, well, on the 29th, one of our friends, Tim, he's having a birthday, and we're going down to, there's an Italian, or not Italian, an Irish restaurant and pub downtown Austin, and this is supposed to be an authentic Irish pub. The pub's done up in different, you know, different eras and everything else. So we're going to be, this guy's from Boston, Mass. He's got a little Irish in him, I guess, which, you know, it comes from his years in Catholic school, I guess, from, you know, it's a little Irish priest that was in him or something. But anyways, Tim's celebrating his birthday, and we're going to be downtown in Austin. It's Halloween weekend. We're going to throw back some Guinness, and then we're going to go down 6th Street and raise hell. So that's our plan for the 29th. And I know a few of the people that are in the chat room right now have talked about actually being there. So we're still hammering out the details, I think, but it should be a good time.
Yeah, sounds like it, man. Sounds like a perfect opportunity to act on some transgression and, you know, just let it all go. I'm really kind of curious what the world would be like if people didn't feel that they were obligated to the other people around them. You know, I mean, I'm just interested what the world would become if we no longer had this sense of, well, you can't do this because it might hurt this dude over here. And we started thinking to ourselves, well, wait a minute. If I do this, you know, this increases my opportunity to, you know, develop this thing over here that I'm interested in, whatever that is. And so what if a few eggs get broken along the way?
Well, you know, I don't think it's that most people feel they have an obligation, that they're worried about hurting somebody else's feelings. I think that most people could truly give a shit about anybody else's feelings. I think it's a matter of most people thinking that they'll get in trouble, that there'll be that kind of, there'll be repercussions that they're not willing to suffer if they do X, Y, or Z. And you see this all the time, that they'll, especially the people that actually pull some shit, you know, that they have that sense of self. They're going to go out and do whatever the fuck they want to do, and then when somebody actually crosses them, then they act all indignant. They act like, well, how can they get away with that? Aren't I protected by society? Aren't I protected by the system? How can they fucking get away with that? It's like, you know, if everybody would sit there and actually start going, you know what, there are no repercussions, but that means that you take all the risks. I think, like we've been talking about, the 70% of the people that in that environment would just go away. They'd just be done. And then you'd have 30% of the people that are either tough as fucking hell or have a sense or have an awareness of self that they just got the hell out of the cesspool and started doing for themselves.
Yeah, either way, it's a win, right?
Right, right. And it looks like Zach wants to call in, I guess. Hang on a second.
Right on.
Zach, you're on the line, man. What's going on?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Can you hear me?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I can hear you. What's up, man?
Cool. Well, actually, you know, I wanted to, not to change the topic, but it was like, you know, I've been on hold for 10 fucking minutes, so it's, you know, you guys have moved on already, but when BC brought up, like, the CPS or, you know, what came to your house and, you know, was, you know, poking around and shit, you know, I wanted to comment on that because it reminded me of an incident here that's going on in California where the federal government is declaring that they're going to shut down all the dispensaries, the medical marijuana weed dispensaries, right? That's a big fucking deal. I mean, in San Diego alone, there's 65 of them just in this one city. And it's kind of like, at what point has the federal government become intrusive, especially when it comes to shit like medicinal marijuana, right? I mean, it has proven medicinal uses, right? I mean, that's a fact. You know, you're prescribed to it by your doctor, but the federal government doesn't recognize it. Employees don't recognize it. So if you go to get a job and you have to do a drug test, which, you know, most large corporations will make you do, and you come up dirty, well, guess what? They're not going to hire you because you failed the drug test. But if you come up positive for opiates and you got a prescription for, say, Vicodin or Percocet, oh, that's cool because you got a prescription. Well, look, fuckers, I got a prescription for medicinal marijuana. Why are you, you know, discriminating against me because of that? I don't get it, and it's a big deal because a lot of people are going to lose a lot of fucking money and be out of work, and it's going to throw a wrench in the machine here in, you know, nice Southern California. What do you guys think about that?
I want to real quick just tap this. Just like I was talking about with my experience here with DCF, I think that the best thing that the state of California can do is just look at the federal government and go fuck off. You know, we're going to sell this shit anyways. And I think the same kind of mentality needs to be applied towards the corporations, man. Oh, you don't want to hire anybody who, you know, pisses positive smoking marijuana, even though they have a prescription for it, then fuck off. I mean, nobody's going to work for you.
Well, and that's the thing. And, you know, with California being, I think it's either the first or second most populated state in the country. I know there's 37 million people who you know, are legally registered living in California. That's not even including the illegal people here, so it's probably fucking, you know, 30% higher than that. It generates about 15% of the entire country's economy. So it's kind of like, I think California should succeed, you know, from the federal government. And, I mean, it's never going to happen because everybody's pussies now. I mean, that shit, you know, it hasn't happened for a couple hundred years. I don't think the state of California is going to step up and do it. I mean, although we do have the Terminator for our fucking governor, so fuck, maybe he could, you know, put on his Terminator suit and start whipping some ass, but I don't really see that happening anymore.
Can you really
right
call
on,
people who live in California people? What do you mean? I was messing with you, dude. You know, the one answer is, you know, going with the system, that California stands up for its state rights. So the individuals stand up for their rights, and they insist that the government stay the fuck out of their business, and that you prove the model to be true. You prove that
medicinal marijuana, the recreational marijuana, is good for society, good for the people that smoke it, and all that. If you believe in the system, that's the way to go, to make sure that you just keep voting on it and keep putting the politicians in power that say they're going to do what you want them to do. The other fucking thing to do, the non-system thing to do, would be, and I've advocated this for years, everybody that likes to smoke pot, everybody that's growing their own dope, should grow it everywhere. There should be so much ditch weed growing in every possible place that can grow that there's no way to get rid of it all without burning down entire cities. And once you have everybody high on pot, once you have everybody pissing dirty when they go to take a piss test, then the companies have to hire potheads. The companies have to hire people that are smoking dope because there's nobody else to do the jobs.
Yeah, I can see your point. You know what's fucked up about it is I don't remember any bill coming around. I remember bills coming around for the legal, decriminalization and the use of medicinal marijuana in California. Those bills have been approved and voted on, democratically and have won. And that's why medicinal marijuana is legal here, and that's why there's dispensaries, every mile down the road. But where was this bill? Where was this vote? That the federal government is just going to come in and close all this shit down.
This is a direct action from Obama's state, or from Obama's staff, rather. As far as I understand this, his chief attorneys or whatever the fuck he's got sitting out there looked around and went, oh, wait a minute, shit's getting too good over there in California. We got to come in and fuck this all up. This will help us save face with this, these little minority groups over here that are bitching and moaning about it, and it might increase our popularity in this next election. I mean, they had to take a stand somewhere to show they had some kind of balls, because at this point in time, absolutely everybody knows that the Obama administration, it was castrated prior to even coming into power. So
that's my understanding, too. Go ahead, dude.
No, go ahead, dude. What I was going to say was nothing important.
Well, my understanding also is that Obama, part of his deal is he's looking at reelection. He wants to make sure that the moderates, the centrists, have a reason to vote for him. So he wants to show that he's tough on drugs. He wants to show that he's tough on the war on drugs. And he doesn't want, California to be singled out as having states' rights. Because that's the Tea Party platform, is that states should have their own rights to do whatever they want to do. He wants to show that federal law means something. So he's enforcing the laws that are on the books. And it looks like, if you're asking when cannabis was made illegal, it looks like by the mid-1930s, cannabis was regulated as a drug in every state, including 35 states that adopted the United States Narcotic Drug Act. So it looks like in the 1930s is when marijuana became a federal law, federally illegal. So you weren't around to vote on it.
Blackie smokes it, makes him lazy.
That was part of it.
People are starting to loosen up, as the next generation is, gaining control and power over the economy and voting, and, the older generations are dying off. People just have a general attitude where, marijuana should not be criminalized, and if there's medicinal purpose for it, well, who gives a fuck? Let somebody get started if they want, right? And I think because of this wave that has been, just crested in the last 10 years maybe, it's kind of freaking what little power some of these old, decrepit, these politicians have left on the hold of, what's going on. And, even a state like Arizona, where I'm from, which is ultra-conservative, man, when it comes to drugs, that isn't the one place you do not want to get caught with drugs. I mean, a fucking a dime bag in your pocket can still get you a felony over there. But they even passed the 420 bill, which is, the legal medicinal use of marijuana, which to me was amazing. I think the government's a little concerned that fuck if Arizona did it, and they're one of the most harshest on drug laws. Fuck, if Arizona fell to it, then maybe everybody else will. And fuck, we'll have a fucking God forbid, you know, a country run by a bunch of pot-smoking, mellow-level-hood people.
Well, when the baby boomers do finally kick off, you're going to see a whole shitload of changes here in the United States. When the baby boomers are finally, like you said, dead and gone, you're going to see marijuana, along with a lot of other drugs, legalized. You're going to see gay marriage legalized. All those people that are holding on to fucking jobs until they're 60 or 70 years old, they'll go away. So the economy's going to turn around because all of a sudden all these young people will be able to go out and get jobs because all these other people have kicked off. They'll be dead. And everything will be a little more lax. Everything will be a little more loose. That's if we can get to that point without being handed numbers and job assignments. But before that, we're still looking at baby boomers probably being around for another 20 years. So people like myself will be looking at retirement before we actually get to that point.
Yeah, and that brings an interesting question too, man. Is retirement really people our age? I don't think there's going to be such a thing, man. Social Security is in the bucket, unless you have a 401k plan, right? Shit.
No, 401k is not going to help you, man. 401k is not going to help you either because that's based on the stock market, and the stock market's in the shitter. So you'll be of retirement age, but it won't fucking matter. You'll be working for the rest of your life unless, like I said, the baby boomers kick off earlier than they were expected. But that could be the thing that actually turns shit around. Personally, I don't want to wait for that kind of thing to happen. I'd rather be able to just make sure that I'm able to take care of myself and not have to rely on that good fortune.
Indeed. Well, hey, guys, it's been nice chatting with you. I got to go here. Dinner's ready. Talk to you guys later.
All right, man. Later.
Right on, man. So I don't know how long we got left on the clock, man.
24 minutes.
Am I still on?
You're still on,
yeah.
Dude.
I have a question I'd like to throw out. And earlier you asked me if you're not down with the game, why are you playing it? I have a similar question. If you're not down with the game yourself, why would you be planning for the future in it, so to speak? Why would you be wanting that system to get better rather than just go away?
You know, I think we're kind of there. I think we're talking about the system going away. We see the thing collapsing. I had this argument actually with somebody in Sin once, and they pointed out that as long as you're alive and in this environment, there really is no escape from that system. Even if the current state of the system is destroyed, it's just going to transform into something else. Now, I think we disagree. You could turn your back from that system. There's a way for you to sidestep the system. It's the process, the dark horse process of being a sly man and moving sideways, basically, away from the system. When we talk about the future, part of the future you have to talk about is consequences of the system being something that's inescapable. So I think that's kind of why we discuss it. But we're also discussing, you know, not having to participate.
Right. It's the separatist mentality. You know, the system can be there and, you know, do its own thing or whatever. You just raised your finger up and said, fuck you, I'm no longer a part of this. And if you cross this line over here, I'm going to shoot you dead and keep doing it until you come and kill me.
Right, right.
Or we have some sort of space where on the surface, anybody from outside a particular town that drives through this town sees everything being exactly the way they see it anywhere else. But the people that actually live in that town, they're living their lives by a separate set of rules and only meeting that minimum obligation as per the system to keep the government out.
Right, but in my opinion, the government is still controlling that town by laying out what that minimum obligation is.
I agree with that. But this is the thinking that is kind of involved in that. We've been talking, and this is a fantasy. So just deal with that as you will. Let's say TC were to, you know, he found a spot somewhere in Florida that it's a small town, and it's
there's some job opportunities. It's good soil. It's close to water, so there's plenty of fishing and everything else. There's all kinds of shit. So if you wanted to be self-sufficient, you could actually go there and have a good chance at doing it. He moves to this town. He picks himself up and he moves to the town and he goes there and he gets himself established. He's playing by the rules so far. He's got the job and everything else. He moves to some trailer park, or he ends up getting a lot of land and he builds some sort of dome house or whatever you want to do. But he establishes himself there. And then he says, Jason, I'm here, and there's a tattoo shop here looking for a tattoo artist. Why don't you come out here? So I pick up all my shit, and I move out to where TC's at, okay? And I'm there now, and I'm getting established, still playing by the system's rules, okay? But now I've got this job, and while we're playing by the system's rules, superficially, just like any other secular nationality or ethnicity or whatever within the United States, whether you're talking about Judaism or, the Hindus or, people from the Middle East, people from, that go to, like, Chinatown, stuff like that. When we get together on our little plot of land, we have our own little social order, okay? We have our own little way of doing things. And we keep talking to people and encouraging them to come here. And more people come here, and as they're coming here, we develop a community. We become a growing force within the local politics. We eventually are able to vote our own people into positions of importance, like the city council, like the chief of police, like whatever, so that eventually it's all our own people in those positions of power. So their job, or they're the gatekeepers, their job is that when the state government comes in and goes, collecting the taxes, whatever they do, our mayor and our city council and our people are able to go, yep, we've met all those obligations, everything's cool. And then as far as all the little bullshit state regulations or city regulations or whatever, they're just that, bullshit. They don't get enforced because everybody's on the inside. Everybody's on the inside of the game. So that's what we're talking about as a possibility of sidestepping all those rules. And again, it's kind of it's a fantasy. I recognize that. And I do see your point. You're playing the system's game, but it's only a surface game. You're not embedded in the system.
Right. Well, there's only one issue I see with that, and that in that particular fantasy, you've allotted only yourself that opportunity. I see that if that ever happened, you would have multiple communities like that spring up with multiple laws that would eventually find themselves in a civil war.
Well, that or either they're in a civil war or you've got all these little enclaves of, pocket people, they're doing their own things. And either the system itself, collapses, or the system remains outside those enclaves. So you'd have different little cities where in this city the system is strictly enforced and strictly in power, and it sucks to be there. And then in this city in Florida, it's cool to be there if you're a Satanist, you have this particular ideology. And then in this city in Texas, you got whatever they do in Texas, here in Texas, they're guns and Republicans or whatever. They're ultra Christian or whatever. Okay, whatever it is they do. But let's say the fuckers in Texas, what they do right? The thing they do right is they fucking grow cows right. They can make a pretty damn good steak. And in Florida, what the hell do we do in Florida? What do we do in Florida, TC? We make cartoons? What do we do in Florida? But either way, yeah, you're right. There's going to be conflict if we choose to deal with each other ideologically. If we decide, for whatever reason, our ideology and our little enclave, we need to enforce it on our neighbors, okay? Then we're assholes, and then there's going to be a war. But if we're not that kind of thing, if it's like, we just do our own fucking thing, and that's our philosophy. So if you do your own fucking thing and leave this hell alone, we can give a shit what you're doing. But, hey, we like your cows. We'll trade you some cartoons for cows, That kind of thing can go on. And again, it's an ideological fantasy. There's going to be conflict. Which, I'd rather be able to live my own life, and if somebody comes to try to tell me that I can't live the life I want to live, and he's putting a gun to my head to get me to do what he wants to do, to have the option to fight that fucker than to have the system we have right now where it's subtle. It's an erosion of my rights. It's an erosion of that opportunity to fight, where it's just, just come along with us. It'll be all right. Just do what you're told. It'll be okay. You still have freedom. You still have your rights. Just not as many as you thought, or it doesn't go as far as you thought. This kind of this gradual turning up of the temperature, that analogy of the frog being in the pot.
that as you gradually turn up the water temperature, it just sits there and boils to death. That's where we're at right now. I'd rather a stand-up fight.
Well, I agree with most of that.
Okay, what's the part you don't?
Well, and I'm not being a smartass, but going back to the fantasy, I can tell you right now that I would definitely aspire to lead my own particular little town or what have you. And my priority would be to absorb the resources of other towns so as to fortify my own and make it as large and as powerful as my own and do so for the rest of my life and encourage my children to do the same. That's just my nature.
And that's perfectly legitimate, that you're going to want to acquire as much land and as much resources and as much people as possible to defend those resources and that land.
Right.
But at some point, you're either going to reach a balance where you either have as much resources as your people could ever hope to use, and you only have so many people to defend it, so it doesn't make any more sense to reach out anymore. Or you come into conflict with so many motherfuckers that they've all decided to band against you and break your shit down. I mean, that's what happens in history over and over and over again. Either equilibrium is reached, or that thing that doesn't reach that equilibrium gets destroyed.
Oh, indeed. But there again, that's my nature. So it would just have to. History is doomed to repeat itself. So yeah.
Right. Well, but the thing is, and you know what? I agree with that idea. The thing we're facing now, the thing that's killing us, is stagnation. Is that we're not seeing that as a possibility anymore. You know, that would be better. You know, if you and I were in conflict, if we were warring over land or the river rights or whatever, and going toe to toe, that would be better than we're both being told what to do by people that we'll never see. The people
and
that will never have the opportunity to engage.
And there will be honor in that life.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. It would be a life versus this mechanical existence we have where we're just cogs in this system. People are commodities in this system. We're being bought and sold back and forth.
Well, I'm ready for a war. What about you guys?
I was born ready, man. I don't think you've been around, man. I recently found out as a young child I was diagnosed with a thing called oppositional defiance disorder. So I'm just built to fight with people.
Do explain. I'm not familiar with that term.
It's a legitimate textbook psychological diagnosis for a person who is overtly defiant to authority.
Well, I guess we all have that.
As far as I knew, that was human nature. That's just kind of the joke of it.
I think part of what we're doing here is preparing for a fight and then looking for one that's worth picking.
Well, in the face of this particular society, if you're geared the way I am, you don't have to look too far to see what the problem is as far as the society and politics and government and the propaganda going back and forth. It was never a question to me what the problem was, even from, you know.
Yeah, it's all a problem. It's what I would call a bad marriage. The idea of society and politics and democracy and unity, and it's a bad marriage, man.
Right, and I guess when we're talking about fighting, we're talking about going to war. So going to war means amassing your resources. Going to war means strategizing. Going to war means getting your troops lined up, getting ready to actually go into combat. So, you know, going into war,
doesn't mean just going out and picking any stupid fight, but actually looking at, you know, what it is you can accomplish. How do you meet your goals? How do you achieve your strategic agenda, and then execute it?
Well, and I think personally, that's where I think at least you have to imagine that war is going to start with the state of affairs that we have now. So you're not really going to have legions marching on legions. You're going to have millions of individuals strategically locating themselves and being as detrimental to individual systems as they possibly can to have an overall effect. But there has to be that unit, that unison, that you have to have that collective of people working in unison, even though they're all doing different things. It's not going to be a big bloody war to begin with.
Right. It's going to be ideological at first, and it's going to be guerrilla warfare at first.
Indeed.
And I would even propose that the best thing that we can do at this point in time is to migrate towards people who share common ideologies. And like I've been saying for, I don't know, the past month and a half or whatever we've been doing this show, it's our turn to draw the line in the sand and say, if you cross this line, fucker, I'm punching you.
Right, and there's an article, the first article on eminentmind.info, where another person is expressing just those same ideas. He's talking about theology and philosophy, but he's talking about how you need to start, you know, rallying the people around you that share in this same ideology, that share in the same mindset, that you need to start, you know, building those individual cells wherever it is you're located. That if all of your bullshit's on the internet, that if all of your, you know, all of your talk and all of your effort is here in virtual reality, well, then you're never going to get the actual reality to change.
But you have to be prepared, because their next step is going to be label us terrorists. And you have to be ready for that. They're going to lie about you. They're going to say so many things and make... Even to speak out what you're thinking is going to become illegal before we become successful.
Yeah, I'm a war vet, so I'm already on a list with Homeland Security as a potential terrorist. So I live that reality every day.
No, I wasn't aware of that.
Right. I would say that's the whole point of everything we've been talking about, is getting ready. It's no longer time just to point at shit and go, that's fucked up. I think everybody's got in their mind that their shit that's fucked up, their shit that they would change. It's now time to look for people that want to change the exact same things that you do. And I mean exact same thing. The one thing that I find most appalling about the Occupy Austin thing that Jason's talking about is everybody's willing to go for this huge egalitarian cause of removing that 1% from its influence on the government. But when they sit down and they start talking about things that are more, I don't know, closer to home, they can't agree. You know, so it does them no good to get rid of the corporate power that's out there, because another power will emerge. Last I knew, the last real power that emerged like that was religion, and the new religion, of course, is the dollar bill now. I mean, next it'll be, fashion or fuck, who knows, maybe the school of Chef Ramsay.
All right, well, you know what, with the Occupy movement, when they extract the corporate money from the political system, they're going to invite the union money to fill that vacuum. So it's exactly what you're saying. But the thing I think they're missing out on is they don't need consensus to act. You know, you're talking about getting prepared. A part of preparation is trying different strategies, trying things out to try to figure out what works. So it's not just talk like they're doing down there in the Occupy movement. It's not just talk like they're doing online in some of these forums. It's actually going out and doing something, seeing what's successful, seeing what you can get away with, that transgression that we're talking about. That until you're doing that, you're not really getting ready. You're just jerking off.
Right.
Right. I mean, I can imagine my child going through his terrible twos and remembering all the constant pushes at his boundaries that he did and seeing how much he grew every time he figured out, oh, wait a minute, this works for me, that doesn't work for me. I mean, I'm dealing with a 4.5-year-old who can actually construct conspiracy-style plots and execute them. You know, he knows exactly what chords to pull and which adults to create an entire scenario where the end result is exactly what he wanted. You know, whether that's attention or you know, everybody to stop and tell him what he's doing wrong, whatever it was he was trying to achieve. He's a natural manipulator because he's learned his boundaries. He knows which lines to cross and which not to and when.
That's beautiful, man. Well, that's
when you talk about children being true magicians. You know, Crowley said it. I think LaVey cribbed notes from Crowley said it also, that children are true magicians because they're totally self-indulgent. It's all about what it is they want, what it is they want to accomplish, and they're willing to go to any means that they need to go to get it. They recognize there's limitations. They're only 3 feet tall, and they only have so much physical strength. So they're willing to turn to whatever other strategies are necessary. And they're not going to get themselves destroyed in the pursuit of whatever it is they're going for, but they will find a way to make it happen.
Well, also they're not as programmed by the system either. So they're actually adhering more to their natural state than their societal programmed state. They're not domesticated.
But if we could get back to that mentality in so many ways, it repeats itself over and over and over again. If we could re-embrace that childlike self-indulgence, that childlike insistence on the world not being the way we're told it is, but the way we actually experience, that would be something. I think that's a worthwhile goal.
I agree.
So, anyway, I mean, it's all about transgression, and I think that's the one lesson you learn from children is it's not only do they know what the rules are and when they're breaking it, but they're not scared to break those fucking rules.
Right. Or they have to break the rules to actually find out what the rules are.
Yeah.
What are the real rules?
If the juice is worth the squeeze, I think that's their most important lesson. You know, is it worth those 5 spankings if I get to stay up late one night watching Dad's porn and smoking his marijuana while he's sleeping?
Well, gentlemen, we got about 3 minutes left before the end of the show. I don't know. Any closing thoughts?
Eminent Mind.info.
Yeah, check out eminentmind.info. I also think we're always looking for other people to write. So if you've got some ideas, it's weird, kind of it's starting to take off. There are a lot of people actually checking it out, and if not commenting directly on the site, they're commenting through emails or what have you. People that are actually hearing about it, taking a look at like this and seeing what's going on. It's not a group. It's not an organization. There's no hierarchy. It's just people sharing different ideas. It's more philosophical, I guess. But, check that out, eminentmind.info, and comment. Let us know what you think. And, that's definitely something that's going on.
Right on. Right on. Well, that's all I've got for the night, man. I'm actually coming down from my beer buzz now, so I'm going to have to eat some aspirin and go to bed. So.
All right, man. All right, well, good luck with your tattoo tomorrow night, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man, thank
all
you.
All right, we're out.
Good talking to you,
Astro. We're out of here. Later, man. Yeah, good talking to you, man.
Thank you for listening to the opinions expressed by our guests. guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by CC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but it's your discretion to us. Special thanks to Dad, the Rocky Aroma, for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is the Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Dog Radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?